And now, the media circus. In London yesterday, in a speech on politics and the media, British Prime Minister Tony Blair referred to the news media as a feral beast. On this side of the Atlantic, former CBS anchorman Dan Rather angered his old network when he accused CBS of dumbing down and tarting up the evening news, which is hosted by Katie Couric. David Folkenflik is NPR's media correspondent and ringmaster in our occasional series, The Media Circus. If you have questions about Rather's criticism of the CBS evening news or Blair's reflections on the media, give us a call, 800-989-8255. Email talk at npr.org. You can also join the conversation on our blog, npr.org/blog. of the Nation. David Folkenflik joins us from our bureau in New York. Nice to have you back on the program, David.
Hey, great to hear you again, Neil.
And Dan Rather is a guest on MSNBC with Joe Scarborough and on CBS Radio, who asked him about the poor state of the CBS evening news. Here's what Dan Rather had to say.
The mistake was to try to bring the Today Show ethos to the evening news and to dumb it down, tart it up, in hopes of attracting a younger audience.
And that phrase, dumb it down and tart it off, sent it off a round of controversy. Even Rather himself says it might have not been the wisest thing he's ever done. How badly, first of all, is he right?
Well, Rather, as you said, touched off a firestorm, and he was attacked by Les Moonves, his former boss, as the chairman of CBS. This is one of those rare occasions where I think everybody may be right, as opposed to one of those occasions where typically everybody is a bit wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Rather has talked about the difficulty that CBS Evening News has had under Katie Couric. She took over Labor Day last year, as you may remember, and she did bring, in a sense, a Today Show ethos as she took over the desk. She did, in a sense, try to personalize things. There's the notion that she, as anchor, would be doing more one-on-one interviews, a little bit more banter, a little bit. There were softer features. There was commentary inserted, and it didn't quite take. CBS said, you really have to give us time. We're going to experiment. We're going to stumble a bit before we hit our stride. Didn't stop them from earlier this year firing Couric's executive producer, Rome Hartman. After all, much tougher to fire the $14, $15 million a year anchor. Their ratings really have dropped. And the amazing thing is they've done so in comparison even to the person that she succeeded, which was somebody who's not as famous, not as well-known, Bob Schieffer, a well-regarded, avuncular, respected mm-hmm. Washington correspondent for CBS News. This has been a difficulty. They really put a lot of chips and bet them on her. And his choice of words, tarted up, invoked in some ways perhaps the question of sexism, a gender
well,
reference.
Well, Les Moonves said this was a sexist remark and got it, Dan Rather, that way. Dan Rather says, look, that wasn't what I meant.
And it's not necessarily evidently clear at all that he did mean it in a gendered sense. The way in which Moonves has a point is that she has been subject to certain kinds of criticism and certain kinds of intense attention, by virtue of being really the first primary female solo anchor. Mm-hmm. People talked about her look. People talked about how much of her legs they could see. And in some ways, it may well turn out to be that the reason that Charlie Gibson, himself an avuncular, comfortable presence who took over at ABC News, the reason that he has become clearly the top-rated anchor, according to Nielsen ratings estimates, is that he is this avuncular and possibly familiar and male presence. And that would reflect less of a sexism of, say, Dan Rather criticizing his former employers, but more a question of sort of what the American public's taste is.
Dan Rather, of course, also came into criticism not merely for being sexist, but about being a bitter old man.
Well, without getting into the age thing, tensions are definitely strained between him and CBS. I mean, he sort of slunk off. He was forced, essentially, his hand was forced. He retired ahead of schedule after his botched 60 Minutes two-piece on President Bush's military service record, which we don't have to rehearse entirely here.
Mm-hmm.
And then he kind of was his contract was allowed to drop and not renewed, and he didn't really get to take the victory lap that I think he had hoped to. And I think he had hoped to sort of rehabilitate himself by doing more solid pieces for 60 Minutes that could stand up to scrutiny. He didn't get that chance, and he's criticizing CBS. That's not to say that his criticism lacks merit. I mean, one of the things CBS and other networks have spent a lot of money to cover Iraq, but you know, if you look at foreign coverage on the commercial news networks, the big three, they've cut way back from where they were a generation ago in the early 80s. And much of that took place under three of the most famous anchors of all time, Dan Rather and his counterparts, Tom Brokaw at NBC, and even Peter Jennings at ABC, who had a fondness for foreign news. It's just they decided that these were profit centers instead of merely prestige centers.
Well, if you've got questions about this entertaining and interesting insight into the operations of CBS Evening News, give us a call, 800-989-8255. Email is talk@npr.org. But I wanted to get to another curious source of media criticism, and this, of course, from Tony Blair, 10 years now, the Prime Minister of Britain, and on his way out has been giving a number of reflective speeches about what he's learned in his 10 years at number 10 Downing Street. And this is some of what he had to say yesterday, Prime Minister Tony Blair speaking at Reuters headquarters in London.
First, scandal or controversy beats ordinary reporting hands down. News is rarely news unless it generates heat as much as or more than light. Second, attacking motive is far more potent than attacking judgment. It is not enough for someone to make an error. It has to be venal, conspiratorial. Watergate was a great piece of journalism, but there's a PhD thesis all on its own to examine the consequences for journalism of standing one conspiracy up. What creates cynicism is not mistakes. It is allegations of misconduct. But misconduct is what has impact. Third, the fear of missing out means that today's media, more than ever before, hunts in a pack. In these modes, it's like a feral beast, just tearing people and reputations to bits. But no one dares miss out. And the final consequence of all of this is that it is rare today to find balance in the media. Things, people, issues, stories are all black and white. Life's usual grey is almost entirely absent. Some good, some bad. Some things going right, some going wrong. These are concepts alien to much of today's reporting. It's a triumph or a disaster. A problem is a crisis. A setback, a policy in tatters. A criticism, a savage attack. And then in turn, the NGOs and the pundits know that unless they're prepared to go over the top, they shouldn't go out at all. Talk to any public service leader, especially, for example, in the NHS or the field of law and order, and they will tell you not that they mind the criticism, but they become totally demoralized by the completely unbalanced nature of it. Now, is this becoming worse? Again, I would say yes. In my 10 years, I've noticed all these elements evolve with ever greater momentum. Now, it used to be thought, and I include myself in this, that help was on the horizon. New forms of communication would provide new outlets to bypass the increasingly shrill tenor of the traditional media. In fact, the new forms could be even more pernicious, less balanced, more intent on the latest conspiracy theory multiplied by five.
British Prime Minister Tony Blair speaking yesterday at Reuters headquarters in London. And David Folkenflik, I do have to say, I should quote that in the beginning of that speech, he acknowledges his own complicity. We, he said, paid inordinate attention in the early days of New Labour to courting, assuaging and persuading the media. In our own defense, after 18 years of opposition and the at times ferocious hostility of parts of the media, it was hard to see any alternative. But such a risk ran the risk of fueling the trends in communications, which I now question. Remarkable candor from, well, I guess still sitting politician, though not for very much longer.
And may I commend you on that translation from the original British. I got to say, it was a fascinating speech to read and to listen to for two reasons. One, in some ways, you could argue it's a very sophisticated and self-pitying speech. You know, Nixon and Spiro Agnew were famous for offering unsolicited critiques of the press and, you know, for a generation fueled certain ideological broadsides against the media. At the same time, he was a guy that, as you pointed out, entered an astonishing 10-year run through very, very complex spin control, very, very assiduous courting, as he says, of the media, ensuring that messages are out there to be received, that the pump is primed, that reporters are set to go with their, you know, with their talking points in a way that Britain hadn't really experienced previously. In the excellent movie The Queen, which is a fictionalized account but of real people, you know, it offers a it captures the way in which he understood the direction of the media and the relationship between that and public sentiment. And, for example, was far ahead of the royal family during the death of Diana about the importance of honoring and reflecting to the people what they themselves had felt, regardless of what the Queen and her family felt about the estranged Princess Diana. You know, Blair himself, you know, 10 years, an incredible run for Labour prime minister. Things began to go wrong as he took up a policy that was central to his administration, and that was, of course, the Iraq War, where he walked hand in hand with the Bush administration. As he diverged strongly from public sentiment, the press turned against him. He had a very contentious relationship even with the BBC, which, you know, mm-hmm. people think of as being a government arm but isn't, or isn't exactly. And he was lashing out over what had been a series of, you know, of coverage of policies that haven't worked out entirely the way he would have wanted. He's really been an impressive figure on the world scene, but he hasn't been master of his own destiny as he has become so centrally identified with the Iraq War. Mm. And he at once has a very sophisticated argument to be made about the shallowness and about the – at one point he talks about how talking points and press releases have to be accelerated, that they're not one and not right. two but even three cycles a day because of the, you know, the 24-hour cable that's prevalent there as well as here, and as because of the blogging and the internet news services that just continually refresh.
Yeah, but that phrase, the feral beast, almost reminiscent the way he used it of Vince Foster's Politics of Personal Destruction.
Well, that's right. And he was very resentful of a series of inquiries that dragged down a number of advisors and ministers. He was interviewed, I believe, in regards to a scandal of whether top donors were given sort of certain kinds of titles by the Queen in exchange for gifts to the Labour Party. I mean, he felt that this was very unfair and untoward. He doesn't exactly call for regulation as I read this or as I heard it, but you know, there are those in the press who are very, very dismissive and critical of what he had to say because it seemed to say, hey, boys, we're all really in the same team. Let's keep our discourse civil. And unfortunately, the people that we elect to represent us here in the States and even those who get elected in Britain don't get to dictate that.
David Folkenflik in the center ring of our media circus. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's get some callers in on the line. This is Mike. Mike with us from Knoxville in Iowa.
Hi, Neil. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I think Mr. Folkenflik hit it right on the head with his analysis, and in particular the self-pitying aspect of Blair's comments. And you can lump Dan Rather right into that too, I think. And it seems to me to be not a coincidence that they're both on their way out and wanting to kind of shape the way they're defined. But you brought something else up that I think was interesting, too, in the way that Blair expressed himself, in that he looked at the attacks and the media using personal attacks against himself and his administration. And I think we're in, and correct me if I'm wrong here, but we're in kind of a topsy-turvy point these days where if policy is attacked, like the Downing Street memos, for example, or Iraq, it really doesn't stir up the attention among the public or even the rest of the media as much as scandals.
He talked about the Hutton inquiry where effectively, to make a long story short, somebody was hounded by the media and believed he had no choice but to commit suicide.
Yeah, and I think, you know, that's obviously a very serious situation, but as an example, the really horrific policy in my opinion, that we have in Iraq is something that should have brought, you know, a massive amount of attention, and it seemed like it just continued on as, you know, old news. So could it be that the media looks for other ways or other angles to try to bring down a politician rather than just going after...
Yeah, and more than ours, Mike is right, David Folkenflik, British newspapers and media outlets tend to campaign, not merely endorse.
Well, they tend to go for the jugular. There's less of the notion of a strict wall separating an editorial page where people give, you know, editorials are essentially advocating specific policies, and news pages, which are in our country, tend to be fairly straight up, whatever the shortcomings of the papers involved. I think it is true that in Britain there's both a question of papers that tend to have point of view. You know, The Guardian, The Observer, The Independent tend to be generally left of center. You know that The Times, The Telegraph tend to be on the right. But there's also the question of just much a bit more blood sport in British media. It's a different game. And, you know, Blair hasn't liked it very much when he's been unpopular. Yeah. He enjoyed it very much when he was able to sort of orchestrate coverage a lot more.
When he was the one who could slip the dogs.
And that is not to say that all the coverage is necessarily fair. And that's not to say that the British tradition of reportage is quite as meticulous as it tends to be on this side of the Atlantic. Hmm. There are pros and cons on both sides of this. I do think that Mike is correct in the sense that sometimes stories that have a personal aspect to it, people can connect to more easily. Hmm. People understand it more than the intricacies of whether or not congressional law was violated. It's a fair point in that way. I don't know that the press gets together and decides, well, let's take them down this way.
Right.
I think it's more a question of what stories stick and get traction.
Mike, thanks very much. Let's see if we can squeeze in one more call quickly. This is Barbara. Barbara with us from Arcata, California. And I'm sorry to ask you to make it short, Barbara.
Okay. Well, thank you for taking my call, Neil. And I wanted to just mention that I think Les Moonves has shown a clear tendency to decontent the news, the whole CBS News department. And the CBS News was the Cadillac of television news for decades.
The Tiffany Network, it has suffered in recent years. You just look at the numbers, David Folkenflik, it's hard to argue with that.
Well, the numbers have really declined. Interestingly, that's occurred at a time when the CBS primetime and the rest of the network has been healthier than ever. They haven't been able to get the formula to attract people back. There is a mixture of they are covering the war. There is some serious news there. But, you know, for years now, the major networks, including CBS, have sort of tried to hold on to their aging audiences. There's a lot more sort of trend in health coverage than there used to be. You don't get the world news in 22 minutes that perhaps you might want. And even the anchors themselves will at times tell you this.
Barbara, thanks very much for the call. And again, I'm sorry we had to make it so short.
Okay.
And David Folkenflik, thanks.
Great to be here.
David Folkenflik joined us in our media circus. He's NPR's media correspondent with us from our bureau in New York. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan in Washington.